through you. Let's head closer to home to SW19. Of course, Wimbledon, Simon, very much underway. I'm delighted to say a bit of a treat in store here. We're joined now by former British tennis number one, three times Wimbledon semi-finalist, two times US Open doubles winner, and former GB Davis Cup captain, Roger Taylor. And alongside Roger is a friend of this show, the tennis broadcaster, that and a lot more, Marcus Buckland. Roger, Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, yeah.
Morning.
How are you?
Great. Marcus, good to see you. And you, of course, Roger. Simon and I were just talking in the commercial break about your exploits, Roger, in the world of tennis. And you have an autobiography out, The Man Who Saved Wimbledon. And it's been written with Marcus. In the book, we see how you, Roger, went from a working class kid in Sheffield to reaching three Wimbledon semi-finals and becoming a two times US Open doubles champion. My goodness, how do you reflect on that time, Roger?
Amazing time. However I got through, I don't know. But I played tennis locally. My mother played in the local park. I had someone to hit tennis balls with. And I kept playing and improving. You know, every time I played, I could do it a little bit better. And so that always got me, positive. I enjoyed competition. And I played in local places like Buxton, Bradford, Leeds, Sheffield, obviously, Hull. And then I never went south until I was 17.
Wow. I mean, it was an unusual route for you, Roger, wasn't it? The way you did it and then ending up down here.
It was. I mean, obviously the LTA just missed the guy with a bit of talent. I've actually got a letter from the LTA to my mother, who was trying to get me a bit of extra coaching. And the LTA wrote back and said, look, this coaching is for guys who can really play and are going to be good players. Bye-bye, Mrs. Taylor.
Marcus, chronicles near misses at SW19 and some of Roger's clashes with contemporaries like Labour, Newcomb, Ash, Borg. You must have loved doing this with Roger.
Oh, Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure. I mean, quite like a bittersweet story, and Rogers is bittersweet. You mentioned Rod Laver, for example. He was the first man to beat Rod Laver at Wimbledon in a decade in 1970. But in 73, that's the year of the boycott, which is a complicated story we go into detail of in the book, and that's why he's called The Man Who Saved Wimbledon. He got to the semi-final. He played Jan Kodesh. He's 5-4 up in the final set. He's a game away from reaching a Wimbledon final. It rains. They go off court for 42 minutes. Roger was about to get in the shower. He thought they weren't going to come back until the next day. And Captain Gibson, who was the referee, suddenly barks, Taylor, back on court in 5 minutes. And Roger admits he lost his focus. He went back out and he lost three games in 8 minutes. Kodesh went on to win the final. Roger would have been a hot favorite to win that final. And we'd be talking about Sir Roger Taylor now, because he would have been the man to bridge the gap between Fred Perry and Andy Murray eventually.
Yeah.
How'd you look back in that, Roger?
Again, please?
How'd you look back on that time that Marcus has just described?
Yeah. Well, amazingly, I'd locked it away, a lot of that stuff. You know, once you lose the match, you're 3 or 4 days, 5 days, you can't speak to anybody, but then you fade into the memory. And with Marcus and I working on the book for 18 months, he's brought out a lot of therapeutic stuff. And I look back on it, I realized that the old England club didn't do me any favors at all. I shouldn't have gone back out. There was no more in Britain. I was supporting the club in the boycott. That was my whole being in there. I was no more in Britain and a member of the club supporting my country, you know, and then to be left 42 minutes and go back on court at 10 past 8 at night when most of the crowd had gone home. It was a it wasn't a nice thing to do, but Wimbledon, they're a bit special. They've got their own ideas.
Of course. But as Roger has described, Marcus, I mean, it was 1973. It was a significant year. And Marcus, we saw the world of sport and politics clash, and it centered around this Yugoslav player, Niki Pilic. I remember it, of course. And you vividly describe it, don't you, Marcus?
Well, it's something that until we started doing it again, I don't think Roger fully appreciated how much it damaged his psyche. And actually, on that run to the semifinals, he played Bjorn Borg in the quarterfinals. And that turned out to be his last singles victory, because throughout 73, there was this big turmoil surrounding the boycott because of Niki Pilic. I won't go into all the details, but 81 professionals pulled out. The newly formed ATP, the Association of Tennis Professionals, put a lot of pressure on all their members and on Roger. But as he said, he was caught in a terrible position. His father, a trade unionist, understood the power of unions. But Roger felt that as the British number one, as a member of the All England Club, he had to play. And many of those 81 have not spoken to Roger to this day, including Cliff Drysdale, who he won the US Open doubles with just a year earlier. So it did cost a lot emotionally, didn't it, Roger?
Yes, it did. I mean, you don't see the guys so much until they come back every year at Wimbledon. That's where I used to meet up with everybody. But I'm not bumping into anybody at the moment who's, you know, singing my praises. But a lot of players wanted to play. Marcus, I think you understand that. They got to be a bit militant when the Americans had all the top players. Jack Cramer was in the front man for them. And they were being heavy-handed with players, saying, you've got to play the boycott. And I was told that by Stan Smith that I would not play tennis again if I didn't join the boycott. And I said, why not? He said, well, we're going to run the game. And that's what was going to happen. If they had got hold of the game, it would be a totally different game. Maybe Andy wouldn't have had a Wimbledon to win.
Gee, I tell you, I remember it. Simon, you're sitting there listening intently to Marcus and Roger.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a very difficult moment in Roger's career.
I imagine it was. I was going to ask Roger about the personalities that he played with at the time, because one of the things I look at now and enjoyed during when I was younger in the 70s and 80s was the personalities of certain players. And you would have played with players or played against players like the arrival of Jimmy Connors in 74. You'd have played with Ilie Anastasi. I mean, when you look at those personalities and you look at overlaying them against the personalities today, how would you compare, Roger?
Well, the thing is that when I came up from the North, I hadn't had a junior career. I didn't get going until, in my first Wimbledon semis was 27, I would think, and then the second one was 30. So I was meeting these young guys. Jimmy Connors was 19, Borg was 17. They were all the rising stars, right? The Alcaraz and Sinner coming through right now. And I didn't know them. And then we didn't have this sort of lovely kissy cuddling when you lose a match. You know, you got stuck in and you fought hard and you looked them in the eye and you said, right, hold on, I'll get you next time. And, I mean, I didn't even know these players. I'd gone court, didn't know them all until I got to Wimbledon. You know, until you met them on centre court or court one or eventually on the main courts, because there's two tournaments running in almost at Wimbledon where the guys who never get on centre court, never get on court one, they're playing here this week, but they're making up the whole tournament. But there's a special group that get on centre court. And the only way I got on was I finally got to the last 16 and then I got on centre court. So that was an amazing experience. Never practiced on it, never hardly ever seen it. And off you go.
And by the way, we should point out, Simon's mentioning some of those great names, and just to give you an indication of how frosty some relationships were, in 1969, Roger played Bob Hewitt, who was a pretty tough character, in Berlin. To cut a long story short, they had a set two at the net. Bob Hewitt said, I'm going to get you afterwards. Roger went, yeah, yeah, yeah. Went back to the locker rooms. Bob Hewitt came in to get Roger, and eventually, in self-preservation, I wish to add, Roger had to lay him out with a couple of punches. So it wasn't as friendly in those days as it perhaps is today.
Yeah, it's true.
Well done, Roger.
Hewitt and McMillan,
Hewitt and McMillan, I remember, yeah.
Yeah. Bob Hewitt was a pretty nasty character. And Simon put that straight at you there. And he sort of would, you know, it was always an incident, always some trouble, swearing at you, you know. Anyway, he did come in the changing room and I thought I was in trouble. I didn't know where I was going to get out of this one, but I wasn't going to run away. No way.
And, excellent. I love
so
that.
So he came in and into the locker room and stuck me up almost against the locker. He didn't touch me at that moment. And luckily there were other players there that were witnesses in the end. And I said, if you touch me, it's on. So he pushed me, and it was on.
A typical unpalatable Australian, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
So that, yeah.
Listen, here's, one, that here's also, one for the two of you, Marcus and Roger, just to finish with, guys, and we'll keep it brief. But now, Wimbledon of the moment, what British success stories do you think will unfold, Marcus? Because we've got our fingers crossed here.
Yeah, we were chatting. There are still 10 British players left in the draw, 7 on the men's side, 3 on the women's side. We're going to see Emma Raducanu in action this afternoon. I don't think Roger has great hopes for her against Vondrousova, Marketa Vondrousova, who is a former champion here. Of course, you've got Sonny Cartel as well and Katie Bolter, who's got a very decent-looking draw. And on the men's side, obviously, Roger is very close to Jack Draper because Jack, like Roger, is a lefty. He's made it to one Grand Slam semi-final already. And I think you feel he could go even further than you one day here, Roger.
Yeah, Jack Draper looks the part, and he's grown up with these modern players. He's not afraid of them. He's played them as juniors, he's beaten them as juniors, and he's beating a lot of them now. And he's built himself up very strong and very determined, and he's got a great game. I think he'll do well. He has a great chance, but it's back to those last two or three matches when the nerves are jangling and you've just got to get through and hang in.
Yeah. Roger, none of them can do what you can say you did. You saved Wimbledon, my friend. Thank you so much.
That's right.
Roger Taylor and Marcus Buckland with us live. Marcus, thanks for organising, mate. And Roger's autobiography, The Man Who Saved Wimbledon, it's been written alongside Marcus Buckland. It's a damn good read, and we strongly recommend it. Let's hope, though, that we can get some British success stories to go with that this time around. It's Jim and Simon live in Talk Sport.